This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans. And its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
While it remains to be seen exactly how many of Canby's traditional events will be able to return in the summer of 2021 and beyond, to paraphrase the great Jeff Goldblum, fun finds a way. Huh? That was pretty good. That's evident in two exciting new drive-through events that will be coming to Clackamas County Fairs in April, Jurassic Empire and the Oregon Og Fest. Billed as the largest, most realistic dinosaur drive-through event ever seen on the West Coast, Jurassic Empire features 60 life-size, ultra-realistic animatronic dinosaurs in their natural habitats. The entertaining and educational attraction comes to Canby April 15th through the 18th. Jurassic Empire reached out to us because they have a tour that is starting in Reno, Nevada in March, and they are going to Portland and Medford, explained Fairgrounds Events and Marketing Coordinator Tyler Neiser. They wanted Canby to be one of their stops, and we didn't want to pass that up because it seemed like such a cool attraction. The venue tested the water with drive-through events last year, including the Halloween-themed Scare Fair and the Just-in-Time for Christmas Winter Fair, finding they could be a successful use of fairgrounds, particularly with COVID-19 safety protocols in place. Neiser said the Jurassic Empire will use a different route than either of those two events that were organized by the fairgrounds. According to Jurassic Empire's website, the experience lasts 20 minutes up to an hour, depending on traffic. Our mission is to educate children and adults alike about the amazing prehistoric creatures of our planet, the attraction says on its website. We strive to make learning about dinosaurs as fun and interactive as possible. Our team arrives at each new city and has a part to do with everything from creating scenes and decorating each era as it were millions of years ago to helping put a smile on your child's face. Tickets are $59 for vehicles with 7 or fewer passengers on weekdays and $69 on weekends. For more information or to purchase passes, visit JurassicEmpire.com. The following weekend, April 23rd through 25th, Oregon Og Fest will come to Canby for the first time in its 34-year history. Typically staged at the Oregon State Fairgrounds in Salem, the annual showcase of all things Oregon agriculture aims to help families better understand where their food, fiber, and flora come from. This unique learning experience features numerous drive-by exhibits designed to make learning about Oregon's agriculture industry educational and entertaining, including opportunities to see farm animals, equipment, and a variety of things grown across the state, all from the comfort of your car. All guests will also go home with an Og Venture kit filled with activities, seedlings, and more to continue the fun at home. We strive to bridge the gap between urban and rural life and to share the wonder and abundance of Oregon's bountiful and diverse harvest, the Og Fest says on its website. Most importantly, this year we are doing this in a safe drive-through manner. The three-day event will be open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tickets are $22 and may be purchased online at oragfest.com or at the gate. Discounted passes are also available in advance at participating Wilco stores. And now the bad news. Hairfest, the popular tribute band festival named in honor of the Wild Hair Saloon, where it began in 2010, has been postponed another year until July 2022. Organizers announced this Friday. Early in 2020, organizers Joan Monin of the Wild Hair and Jason Fellman had shared the news that the Pacific Northwest's signature tribute band festival would be returning to Cambie at the new venue, the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, after 5 years at the Pat's Acres Racing Complex west of town. That was just weeks before the coronavirus pandemic hit Oregon. In May, Hairfest joined the casualty list of hundreds of events nixed in the summer of 2020 after Governor Kate Brown announced new restrictions against large gatherings. Though the COVID-19 outlook is rapidly improving in Clackamas County and throughout Oregon as the vaccine rollout continued, the picture remains too shaky to attempt a massive undertaking like the Hairfest, organizers said Friday morning. Canceling 2 years in a row is a hard pill to swallow for all of us, Fellman and Monin said in a joint statement. COVID numbers are dropping as vaccine rates are increasing, but even the best estimates don't have everything fully open by the time our date arrives. We could try to pull off the event by adhering to whatever restrictions are still in place come July, but candidly, a masked and social distanced festival does not allow us to deliver the true Hairfest experience. The event has been reset for July 8th and 9th, 2022, and organizers are in the process of reconfirming performers for next summer. Most artists have already confirmed, and Fellman said they are confident they will be able to keep bands, stages, and schedules essentially unchanged from organizers' original plans. Fellman and Monin concluded by thanking their devoted and tight-knit community for its support over the years. It's going to seem like a painfully long wait until summer 2022, but our reward will be when it's time for Hairfest 10, we'll be cranking it up to 11, they said. As Tom Petty said, the waiting is the hardest part. In early March 2020, Cambie High School's Spring Musical told the story of a small life form that rapidly grew into a global disaster, which, in hindsight, was maybe just a bit too on the nose. 14 months later, the troupe is planning a triumphant return with a rocking production of We Will Rock You, a jukebox musical inspired by the songs of Queen, which is about a group of young people fighting to bring back music and free expression in a dystopian future where everything is controlled by computers and mega corporations. So yeah, good thing they decided to go with material that has no relevance to current events this time around. Drama teacher and director Craig Holbrook said the musical, which debuted in London in May 2012 and was the 11th longest running musical in West End history, takes place in the far future where a global corporation controls everything and music is computer programmed crap designed to generate the most sales. Again, nothing relevant there. Instruments are outlawed, as is individual thought, Holbrook said, explaining the musical's premise. Rock and roll is a legend, and there is a prophecy that a dreamer will come and rediscover rock and start a new age. The show features more than 20 Queen hits, including Another One Bites the Dust, Bohemian Rhapsody, Killer Queen, We Will Rock You, Somebody to Love, We Are All Champions, or We Are the Champions, Don't Stop Me Now, and many, many more. Basically, the greatest soundtrack ever. Holbrook said he picked the show for several reasons. Theatrical rights worldwide, which holds the copyright, allows streaming for all of its shows, and has pre-recorded performance tracks that negate the need to have a live rock band or crowd musicians in the pit at the Cambie Fine Arts Center. Also, the script's cast needs fit the composition of Cambie's Troupe 632, and I quote, "The music is great. Obviously, it's great." The school edition that Holbrook is using has been adapted from the original Broadway version and carefully edited for use by high school groups. The show has been set for May 20th through the 22nd and 27th through the 29th asked if those dates are tentative, Holbrook replied that they are like jello in the fridge, firming up. The tantalizing possibility is that the school may be able to offer limited in-person attendance at the show depending on the guidelines in place by early summer. Speaking of rock, Canby High School officials have responded to outcry from some community members about a 27,000-pound boulder originally donated and dedicated to the class of 2020 being repainted this week by the class of 2021. Administrators sent a statement to the community Friday saying essentially that this has always been a part of the plan. Each year, the seniors will have the honor of repainting the senior rock, administrators said in an email statement. We will also make sure that the baby rocks, those small rocks seniors personalized and included, are a permanent part of the senior rock. We don't know what that looks like yet. The 13.5-ton monolith had been donated and installed by local contractors and excavators who wanted to honor the senior class that lost the final 3 months of its public school career, including in-person graduation and other rites. In lieu of traditional forms of celebrating graduating students' achievements, administrators, teachers, parents, and community members had pivoted to other projects like surprising each senior with a yard sign in May and lining downtown Canby with banners honoring the class. 2020 was a year like no other, administrators said in the email. We worked hard to create memories for the class of 2020, the class that got their senior year cut short. The tradition of the senior rock started with the class of 2020, and each class thereafter will be celebrated with their graduation year painted on the rock. Though the paint is gone, a permanent bronze plaque commemorating the class of 2020 will be added to the boulder, administrators said, with a dedication ceremony planned once the marker is installed. The intent of the senior rock is to celebrate each senior class, administrator said. The class of 2021 is continuing that tradition that the class of 2020 started, celebrating our amazing graduates and their accomplishments over the past 4 years. We are excited to celebrate with our current seniors, the class of 2021, and with each senior class that comes after them. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. Here we go, Canby! In a reminder that anything can happen in football, and even more so in this strange COVID-shortened season of football, the Cougars on Friday squeaked out the narrowest of victories after surviving a furious second-half onslaught from visiting Cascade, a 4A school that would have never made Canby's schedule in a normal year. After making light work of Hillsboro 48-0 at Hare Field last week, the Cougs were not expected to struggle against Cascade, which Canby penciled in at the last minute when their league tilt versus St. Helens was scratched due to injury and COVID-19 safety protocols. But the visitors refused to be intimidated, mounting a gutsy comeback beginning late in the third quarter after falling behind 20-6. After knotting the score at 20, Cascade, whose team name is also the Cougars, had a chance to take the lead with a long field goal attempt from the 40-yard line with less than 6 minutes left in play. Fortunately for the home team, the kick fell short and the game went into its first overtime. That's right, first. After the extra period ended in a shutout, Cascade was first to put points on the board in the next frame, giving Canby one final drive to keep their hopes alive. Junior quarterback Mikey Gibson and the Cougar offense rose to the occasion, marching confidently downfield and capping the drive with a 25-yard touchdown run by senior Tyler Mead. Rather than play it safe by kicking the extra point and going into a third overtime, Coach Jimmy Joyce opted to give the boys a chance to win with a do-or-die attempt on a two-point conversion. We felt that it was now or never, Joyce later explained. The offensive line said, "We've got it." And Meade had been running hard, so it was an easy call. Again, it was Meade who made the clutch play, coming up with the floater by Gibson in the end zone and securing the Cougars' win 28-27. "What a game," Joey said afterward. Cascade deserves a lot of credit. "I have been coaching for a long time and never seen a team play as hard as they did last night for 48 plus minutes. They do things on offense and defense that really gave us problems." The Cougars' final home game of the season comes Friday, March 26th against league rival Scappoose, followed by a crosstown grudge match with Wilsonville to close out the season. For photos, visit CanbyFirst.com. In other sports news, it was a rough week for Canby soccer as the girls dropped Monday's non-league game on the road to Barlow 3-1, then battled Oregon City to a 0-0 draw Wednesday. The boys continue to seek their elusive first win of the season after falling short in their contest this week, also against Barlow in Oregon City. Canby volleyball continued its dominance this week. The Cougars turned back Lake Ridge on the road in three straight sets Wednesday, then closed out the week with a 3-1 victory over Oregon City. Canby is 5-1 on the season so far, all league games, its only loss being a closely fought 3-2 decision to the undefeated West Lynn. Up next will be a rematch against Lake Ridge Monday and a highly anticipated showdown with Tualatin, who are also 5-1 in the Three Rivers League play so far this season.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. On the Canby Conversation today, we're going to be talking with a couple members of our Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Advisory Committee. We have welcoming back onto our show, Chair Mindy Montecucco. Hi, Mindy.
Hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to join you today, with you today.
Absolutely. We're delighted to have you and also to welcome on a new person to our show, who's also a member of the Bike and Ped Committee, Mike Hamilstrand. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Tyler. Great to be on your show.
Yeah, welcome to Now Hear This Canby. So today we're going to be talking about a big project, and I know something that you guys have been working on, the proposed extension, the so-called Traverso section of the proposed extension of the Malala Forest Logging Trail. And Mindy or Mike, I wanted to start by just giving you guys a chance because the Bike and Ped Committee is one of those many hardworking citizen boards that kind of flies under the radar to the average Canby resident. And you guys do such great work in so many ways for our city. And I'd really love to just give you an opportunity to share kind of your background work, your work on this project to this point.
Sure. We're happy to have this opportunity. Back in December of 2017, the Traverso family donated another 3.5 miles of the logging road trail that extends from South 13th Avenue south to Maxburg Road. And this would essentially double the length of the current logging road trail. And I think, especially after the past year we've all had during the pandemic and just trying to keep our spirits up, we've really come to understand how important the outdoors and nature is to our mental and physical well-being, and to be able to participate with our families for time in nature, getting out for a jog, all these things are just crucial. And in 2013, the city of Canby actually adopted a visioning plan after a lot of community input. And part of that, under Parks and Recreation, one of the three top priorities was trails and creating more trails and extending trails, and particularly the logging road trail. And with that, the Bike Ped Committee has really worked to create opportunity to do just that.
Absolutely. And well, you also recently got the Bike and Ped Committee and the city received a grant to do some work and some planning about what the trail, that extension might look like. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about that process to this point?
Sure. First of all, there is trail and path funding available out there for communities to apply for, and a variety of grants are available. And these don't compete with parks funding for athletic fields or anything like that. You know, even some of it even falls under transportation funding. And the Molalla Forest Road is even part of the transportation plan for the Clackamas County and part of the active transportation for Clackamas County. So seeking out some of these grants to create a draft plan has been really important to take a look at the property that's been donated and how to accommodate the current users, the easement holders on the trail, and how we can safely create a trail for our users.
We're working right now with our consultant Parametrics Engineering they're building for us a development plan with our input, community input, some of the meetings that you probably heard about we've had with the stakeholders. And So I think it's important to first off to emphasize that this is really just a feasibility study. It's not in any way, shape, or form any kind of a final design or a final configuration. The idea is to put something out there for people to comment on, to talk about, and try to determine what the constraints and opportunities are. And that's kind of the process we've been in for the last several months. And Parametrics has issued their first draft of this plan. And the final one's going to be done towards the end of April. And so it's going to change again from what we've already said, based on more input, more knowledge, more questions. But I think the way it's important to understand that a project like this, you start with kind of a what we call a high level feasibility study and see if you can even do it, if it even makes any sense. And then if it does, then you continue to investigate, do more detailed work. And so we're a long ways from detailed work here. We're trying to flesh out what's possible, where the benefits are, where the constraints are. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So in that regard, we think that, you know, from what I can tell, Parametrics has done a reasonable job with this. Their first report and our interactions with them. They're a company that's been around and has done a lot of trail projects like this. So they have a lot of background in these sorts of projects. And so we believe they've done a good job of laying out the possibilities, constraints, and as well as the estimated build and maintenance costs, as well as they can be done at this point, because you know it always your cost estimates and such always become more and more refined the further you go along and the more you bring in the experts to look at particular issues. So So anyway, that's kind of what's going on with the development plan. And I guess maybe I already said that the final plan is going to be out in April. I think it'll be interesting for as many people to look at that as can. And it's actually, I mean, I find it interesting anyway, and to really see what's being discussed so far.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to, before we talk maybe a little bit more about kind of that feasibility side of things, and you laid that out really well, Mike, thank you for that. And, you know, some of the challenges to actually making this a reality. I'd love to ask you just maybe a little bit more about kind of your vision or your motivation for looking at this project, because it is really tantalizing in a lot of ways, right? We have the existing logging road trail, which is very popular with users. People love to be out there walking with their kids. Our family uses it in that regard with bikes and scooters and all kinds of stuff. And on top of that, just like you said, Mindy, with even the increased awareness from things that have happened in the past year of the need for recreational opportunities and the ability to be safely outside in our community. It also just has this really great tie-in with our area's history. It gives a great route through some of the beautiful forests and areas surrounding our community. There's the possibility that it might increase access to the river, if I understand it right. So why don't either Mindy or Mike, why don't you tell us just a little bit more about kind of, in a perfect world without any challenges, right, what would make this such a great project?
So when we applied for this development grant to start with, the Willamette Falls and Landings area, you know, the Willamette Falls project, they actually even wrote a letter of recommendation for us. And I thought that really was very telling because the logging road trail plays so much into the history of our community. That it extended from the Cascades up around Table Rock area through Molalla and Canby and down to near the ferry where the logs were dumped into the Willamette River and floated down to the paper mills at Willamette Falls. As it was, the Willamette Falls project was very excited that this could be a real amenity to the project that they're doing. You know, you have Shampooey, you have Molalla River State Park, you have so much of the history of the Willamette River and the possibility of connecting a BLM land from up in the Cascades down to the Willamette Falls area if it becomes a national park. This could be an incredible link. Granted, there's other links to make, but it would probably provide a little synergy to get some of those other links going to Willamette Falls, to Shampooey Park. And there's so much rich history here with our agricultural heritage and logging and indigenous peoples. You know, we live in an area, Canby is the garden spot. It's the center of agriculture, even during times of just the indigenous peoples. You know, they came here for the strawberries and everything. So anyway, we can really highlight a lot of that.
I think that what comes up for me is the, you know, the... if you talk about no restraints, you know, the whole concept of being able to get on your bike and ride all the way up the Molalla Forest Corridor, that's just tantalizing. And so that's not what we're proposing here, but it's maybe a step in that direction. And you know, if you can see the success that some of the other bike trails have had, like the, well, I should say bike and pedestrian trails, like the Vernonia, Banks Vernonia Trail. And I don't know, that's probably 20 miles long. And it starts in farmland, goes up through the forest. And it's a, you know, people just flock there to ride on it. And so that's kind of the first thing that strikes me about, you know, if it was unrestricted, what you might be able to do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about some of the challenges. Let's talk about the feasibility. You know, we a couple of weeks ago, we did have a couple of folks on our show to talk about this project who are neighboring property owners on either side of the proposed extension. And they cited a number of challenges. Really, I mean, they're different things that they shared as far as why they personally oppose it or wouldn't think it's a good idea. But what I thought was maybe most valuable to share with the community was what they felt were really the challenges to even the construction, that they felt that there were things in terms of the land there and actually making this trail a reality that would make the project either a lot more expensive or a lot more difficult than maybe that they felt had been conveyed to the public, or even just impossible in some areas that as far as they felt. Mike, based on your earlier comments, I wonder if your response to that might just be like, yeah, we know. I mean, that's kind of what this whole process is about, right? In terms of the feasibility and kind of identifying those challenges and possible ways forward.
I don't think we know. I mean, and certainly the things that Mitch has pointed out are of interest to us, and we really appreciate the input that he's provided. And I think that my sense is that in the end, if we want to build it, it can be built, and it can be built within the cost parameters that Parametrics has put down. You know, who can say what it's really going to cost? But you know, they're taking a much more educated guess at it than I would. And yeah, I think there are some constraints along that road, but I'm not sure that any of them are insurmountable, especially up to where the road ends right now. I think all that, the best I can tell, I think is going to be able to be dealt with one way or another. I know what I listened to Mitch on the podcast about the narrow area with the steep banks, and we talked to the consultant about it, and they seem to think that, you know, there are ways to get it done. And I think part of the confusion might be, well, I'm not saying confusion, but, you know, if you look at this report, which I don't beg everybody to do, but, you know, there are two options being proposed for that path. One is without an equestrian lane and one with an equestrian lane. And if you have an equestrian lane in there, it is going to, I mean, that's going to be a challenge. And Parametrics knows that. So it's going to be more challenging than doing it the other way. I'm not going to say, you know, anything more about it than that. But it might be part of a kind of narrowing down process we have to go through. What can we really do here versus what's been proposed? And as you might notice, there have been a number of places where Parametrics has provided options A, B, and C. And usually one of those options will work. for the various places where there's constraints.
Yeah. And just so listeners know, we do have those documents available for you to download. Definitely do recommend that you check out the draft report and that information.
Yes, we do encourage everyone to go online to take a look at the draft proposal and give your feedback, good, bad, or otherwise. We want to know what all those constraints and opportunities are and make a great plan. Also, you know, there's been no other information put out there about cost or anything. You know, when you receive property, it's a great thing, but yeah, also have to create a plan. And in that planning process, we have to have public outreach. So unfortunately, with that goes people assuming the process is further along than what it is. And so we're really at the information gathering stage and getting that draft proposal going so that from there we can go through with more detailed planning and yes.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with, honestly, with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me. Three generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
That's a great segment, Nick, because that was going to be my kind of last question wrapping this up here. But I did want to respond to Mike. I just feel like that point was well made as far as the expertise that, I mean, that you board members are bringing to this project, as well as the consultant that was hired. Having gone out there with Mitch as just a city slicker, non-expert, non-construction guy like myself, it is a little shocking in some places, you know, having just seen the very nicely maintained existing trail and then, you know, seeing this much more rural kind of utilitarian road that has been kind of integrated into the small farming community that exists there now. And, you know, just seeing that and not having the expertise, it's sort of like, oh yeah, I don't see how this could ever happen, but I don't have that expertise that can kind of solve those challenges based off skills and experience and having seen ways that you can work around things like that in the past. Moving forward, what does that look like? We do have, as Mindy, as you mentioned, the documents are out and there's a survey that's open through March 26th with you guys looking for input from the citizens, like you said, good, bad, ugly, or otherwise. And what, and Mike, you said that around the end of April, hopefully is when you'd be expecting that final report. What kind of happens at that point, or what does the process look like going forward? Who's kind of the final type decision maker here? Does it go to city council, or what does that look like? Are we still kind of just too early to kind of say this is what the future is going to look like?
City of Canby would take a look at that proposal, and if adopted, then we would be able to go forward and seek further grants for further more refined design and possible construction down the road. Also, Tyler, I wanted to mention, as a bike rider and pedestrian, heading out towards Molalla, or south of the city, is always pretty dangerous because of high speed traffic on Ivy Street, Highway 170 there. There's some pretty serious pinch points along there. And also out going towards Molino Road also. And this Traverso section would really allow bikers and walkers to get past those areas safely and onto more quiet rural roads to connect towards Molalla. And it's always great when you can minimize the contact of high-speed traffic with bikers and walkers, of course, for all parties involved.
You know, I talked earlier about having a trail that goes all the way to Molalla and everything and how great that would be. The truth is, if we can just get the people out to the country roads around where the forest road is, primarily, I mean, yeah, Elisha Road is very attractive from a biking perspective, because you can go up that road and then you're in the country. There aren't any cars to speak of. And the area south of Canby is a wonderland for bicycle riders. Are you a rider?
Yeah. And it is beautiful country out there with all the farms and everything. I hear you on that. And good exercise, lots of hills.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we're really investigating a variety of access points, not just Elisha Road. And there's obvious problems with Maxburg Road right there at the base of that hill. But again, you have to start somewhere to figure out a plan to have, we're really hoping to find minimal impact access points in order to give people access where they won't be trespassing onto private property, and also not overwhelming the adjacent property owners or the road systems. And very importantly, to allow continued agricultural farming practices to go really relatively undisturbed. And that's really important. Canby's a farming community, and we really respect that and need to make sure that we keep things safe for everyone, including adjacent property owners, business owners, and trail users.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one last thing that I wanted to give you guys maybe a chance to respond to, that I know is a big concern of folks that live in that area, as well as just in the community in general, is the safety and security of this proposed extension that we're talking about, again, a path that goes through a rural area and outside of the city limits, right? And if there were some type of medical emergency or some type of public safety concern with some type of attack or whatever, folks talk about the possibility of, transients finding the trail attractive or things like that. Is that something that you guys could speak to, just as far as kind of how the potential security concerns or the concerns that residents have expressed, how that's being looked at as you move forward in this project?
Yes, I see it as a very legitimate concern. And first of all, I'm really exceedingly pleased and proud of how well our current logging road trail is cared for. And, you know, nothing's perfect, but, you know, it has been, I think, a relative success story. And we hope that that continues for the new extension. We've been speaking with City of Cambie Law Enforcement, and they are reassuring us that they love the logging road. They don't think this is going to be a problem. They will be able to be there. And, you know, we're really talking about intergovernmental agency cooperation agreements to enforce for law enforcement along the trail between Clackamas County and City of Cambie or City of Cambie Law Enforcement. Also, we're looking at good neighbor agreements and having a single point of contact at the city for people to report issues and have responses for. And there's also trail design principles that will really look to address these concerns to keep property owners' property safe and all that. There's a lot that can be done. And really, in our conversations, that has been one of the most talked about points. And also, as far as transients go, you know, a lot has to do with law enforcement approaches. And so far, it's been very successful out here. Also, in the areas where the city owns property, but the Mulala Forest Road isn't there, because there's actually over 80 acres out there. We're looking at nature trails to go through and really trying to find a core group of volunteers that will continue keeping those trails safe and even patrols and such. I mean, it really is one of the main subjects that we discuss.
That's true. And yes, and we've been in conversations with the city about this. It's kind of the hot thing on our plate right now, I think.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us about this today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share as we wrap up here?
I think what I'd just like to say is that, you know, we appreciate the adjacent landowners and their situation and, you know, their point of view on a lot of this. And we don't, I think we can say that, you know, we don't intend to ram this down anybody's throat. And we want to be a partner with them and come up with solutions that are good for them. And maybe even we could, as part of our project here, we can do things that will improve the situation with the vandalism and so forth, the trespassing. You know, I think the other thing that strikes me is parking. I don't believe that we're going to have a parking lot at the end of Elisha Road. And I think we understand the, you know, Ken Baker's issue there. And I don't see that coming to pass. So, and we don't want to see cars parked on his road. You know, he made that description about a quarter mile of cars parked on either side of the road and everybody's walking down to the river. If, you know, we're not going to do anything that creates a situation like that. So I just end on that note.
Yeah, absolutely. Mindy, any final thoughts?
Yes, I just think we have such a wonderful opportunity, and I look forward to hearing from the community. And again, really encourage you to go online, find the Mulala Forest Road Traverso section link at the City of Cambie, and please take a look at the plan, and we hope to create a really viable, usable plan for everyone. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you both again for taking time out today and for your hard work and your approach to this issue. I just want to shout out Canby in this, and it's been really a joy for me to have this opportunity to hear from you, to hear from Ken and Mitch, and really just the spirit in which I feel like all of you, including them, are approaching this in an issue where there is a difference of opinions, where you sort of have a clash between kind of some newer ideas, some kind of older, more traditional ideas and uses of the land, different views of property rights and what you can do and should do with your property and things like that. Things that could become very contentious and I think easily could have happened here. And yet I hear from both of you and from them a real sense of cordiality, a real sense of not necessarily demonizing or thinking the worst of the people on quote unquote the other side or difference of opinions. And I just want to appreciate that because that's not always a guarantee or a given in our society that we see in discourse, both nationally and statewide. So thank you both for that and for your work. And like we said, we check the show notes of this episode for links to all that information, as well as a survey where you can share your input. And I'm sure we'll be chatting about this again. Mindy and Mike, thanks again.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.